Our next case is 22-1048, FinGen LLC versus Sonic Wall, Inc. Counselor Brooks, you reserved of your 15 minutes, you reserved 5 minutes of your time for rebuttal, correct?
I have, Your Honor.
Okay. We're ready to go when you are.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. It's a pleasure to be back before the court in person to see everyone's faces. With the court's permission, I would like to start with...
It's good to see everybody without the mask, too.
Yes, exactly, Your Honor. So, small steps, but we're getting there. With the court's permission, I would like to start with the district court's granting of summary judgment of non-infringement on the 494, the 844, and the 780. When the briefing was initially...
Downloadable patents, right?
Correct, Your Honor, the downloadable. When the briefing was originally done, SonicWall argued that there was no need to reach the merits of that because in another case, the ESET case, the court had found the term downloadable to be indefinite. That ESET court has now ruled on that and, in fact, reversed, and downloadable is no longer indefinite, so now we have the 494, the 844, and the 780 back alive and well in this case. So we do reach the merits then of whether or not the court was correct in granting summary judgment of non-infringement based once again on the term downloadable. So what we have is a claim that reads, claim 10 of the 494, for example, at appendix 182 through 209, a receiver for receiving an incoming downloadable. What SonicWall successfully argued to the district court was that there is never a downloadable received by a receiver. And the reason being that the downloadable is an executable application program, which is downloaded from a source computer and run on the destination computer. All the parties agreed, and the court so found in the court's opinion at Appendix 57, that it is undisputed that network devices transmit files in a sequence of packets. Therefore, it is undisputed that this claim term, if the claim is interpreted the way the court and SonicWall argued successfully and the court interpreted, that upon receipt, the downloadable has to be already executable, then it reads out all embodiments because the internet always, virtually always, transmits files in a sequence of packets. Instead, what we actually have here is it's a semantic issue. An executable application program is simply a type of file, .exe.
You agree to the construction for downloadable, right? Isn't that an agreed construction between the parties?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And in fact, that is what the ESET court has now so found, that a downloadable is an executable or interpretable application program. So it's now as a matter of law. That is the correct construction. We don't dispute that. What we dispute is the way the court read it, which is that that means that at the time it is received at the receiver, it has to be executable. The court imported a temporal limitation.
And I mean, the actual construction, maybe let me just follow along with your argument that you're making here, counsel. It says executable application program, which is downloaded from a source computer and run the destination computer, right? That's the agreed construction?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then just so I understand, isn't it almost just an outcome in light of the construction that you agreed to that it really would need to be executable at these different points? I mean, you're implying that that's not the case. Tell me more about why.
That's not the case, Your Honor, because in speaking to an executable application program, what did the inventors have in mind? If we look specifically at, let's look at the 494 at appendix 205, column 5, lines 20 through 28. The inventors are describing how a file type detector receives and determines...
Sorry, what column and line again?
I'm sorry, Ron, I went too fast.
I just missed it.
It's column 5, lines 20 through 20... I'm sorry, I misread it. I can't read my own handwriting. Column 15.
Okay, that's where
I got wrong, Your Honor. Sorry, right. It's column 15, lines 20 through 28.
All right.
So the inventors are describing, we've got a potential downloadable. It has a file header, which, by the way, SonicWall also argues means it's not executable, because as long as the file header's there, you have to strip that away before it becomes executable. Of course it has to have a file header. It's the IP address. How else does it know where to go? And that it then talks about these various executable or standard, and it says .exe file format. And then if we go to the end of that paragraph, it distinguishes it from, for example, a .com. Or I would say it could be distinguished from a .jpeg or a .pdf or a .xls.
If I'm looking at the correct portion of the specification you're pointing to, it talks about a potential downloadable. Is that right?
It originally starts with a potential downloadable. Maybe if I could give a little more background. These were pioneering patents. The internet was just getting going. These inventors were looking at ways to stay ahead of the hackers. And it's the .exe files that were the most dangerous, because those are the ones that get, as the construction says, executed at the source computer. When that execution takes place, that's when, if there's malware in there, destination computer is going to get contaminated.
And so the claims don't talk about potential downloadable, they talk about downloadable, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. And this begins by talking about potential. So we're looking now. Is this a potential downloadable? And then it goes on and describes, for example, do we have executable code? It specifically says that. Now it becomes a downloadable if there's executable in there. If it doesn't have executable code, if it's a .pdf or a .jpeg or a .doc, the word document, then this invention isn't worried about it. It's looking for, is it an executable? It doesn't have to be executable at the time it gets to the receiver, because it can't be. It gets packetized. And everybody.
Did you present evidence that the packet that's received at the SonicWall gateways could be executed at the time that it was received there?
No, Your Honor. It is packetized. And so at the time of receipt, it is an executable, but it is not executed. It doesn't get executed until it goes to the destination computer, at which point it is reassembled, and now you have your full file again. And that's just how the internet works, and that's how the inventors knew the internet
to work. We know that at that point that the packet would be executable.
The reason we know that it, in order for it, because the construction says run on the destination computer, run means execute it. And so it can't get executed. And we agree with SonicWall on this. It can't get executed until it is reassembled. An example would be, I go to a library, I ask for a book, I get handed one chapter at a time. That's how the library transmits its books. I'm going to have to reassemble that book, especially if they give me the chapters out of order. I'm going to have to reassemble that book before it can be read, in my case, by the destination computer, or executed. And so what the court did here, and what SonicWall very cleverly did, was convince the court to read out all embodiments. This is how the internet works. These pioneering inventors knew how the internet worked, wrote these claims to cover their invention, and their invention dealt with, they were looking for these .exe files, these executables. And once they determined that it contained executable code, now they're going to look for that malware. And they're going to keep it, firewall, they're going to keep it away from the destination computer, so that when the destination computer executes the code, it doesn't also execute the malware or the Trojan horse.
I thought the district court's analogy using a cake was a good one. What's your view about that analogy?
I think that one is inapt, because it isn't a thing that the district court, a cake was, the district court was saying, in my pantry, I've got flour, I've got sugar, I've got eggs. I think the puzzle one, however, the district court also used, is more apt. I go to a store and I say, I want to buy this puzzle. And they
get the cake.
Pardon me?
The cake's not done yet. You were talking about the cake.
Oh, I just think it's not apt, because it's not a thing. It's just pieces that may not end up a cake. It may end up a pizza. It may end up occur. In my case, it won't end up anything because I'm a terrible baker, so it will end up a disaster. But going to the other analogy used by the district court, though, of the puzzle, that is a thing. It's a concrete thing, just like an executable is a thing. And the district court said that if I go and buy a puzzle, it's not a puzzle until I put it all together. But it is a puzzle. That's the whole point of buying the puzzle, is to put it all together. And the user has asked for an executable file. And the way the internet works is that file is too big, and Your Honor may remember the ESET case about small versus not small. The file's too big to transmit all as one, and so it gets packetized, and the court found, nobody disputes, it is undisputed, that network devices transmit files in a sequence of packets. So now it's chopped up. But I, the user, am waiting for and will get that executable file. So it gets sent over, it is packetized, it is at the receiver, which is also known as a gateway or a firewall. And at some point after it is scanned for malware, in order for it to get executed at the destination computer, it is reassembled. But this reassembly requirement is nowhere in the claim that it has to happen at the receiver. And even if it did have to happen at the receiver, that doesn't get around SonicWall's problem then, which is SonicWall is saying when it gets there, it has to be executable. But then SonicWall turned around and argued to the court that it has to get reassembled at the receiver so that the receiver is in possession of an executable.
Hey, Counselor, you're into your rebuttal time, and I'm going to restore your time, but I don't want you to sit down yet. Can you get to the damages issue?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll get to the damages issue, and I'd also like to very briefly talk about the 408, because this is actually an issue. May I talk about that first, Your Honor, if I talk about it very briefly?
Yes.
This is an issue that impacts not just this case, but all cases going forward. What SonicWall successfully argued to the district court was the Baldwin case, according to SonicWall, stands for the unremarkable proposition that, quote, while a computer can mean one or more computers, each of the one or more computers must perform the recited steps attributed to that computer.
Does it matter that the word A appears in the preamble?
No, Your Honor. I think Baldwin and all its progeny, Symantec, Paragon, Communique, makes very clear that what they were trying to say is that a computer is not limited just to a single computer. It can be one or more. And that means that in the case, for example, of the way SonicWall works, if you look at the 408 claim, which is very lengthy.
But is it the difference in this case, especially that the word A is followed by the word the?
No, actually, Baldwin specifically addressed that too, and specifically said that even though you then say the or said computer, if it starts with A, or Symantec actually was a computer, Baldwin was the fabric roll, but it did say a fabric roll, and then the fabric roll did not limit it to an individual.
What do you say about the Convolv case?
The Convolv case, Your Honor, it's funny, I was just looking at it yesterday and trying to remember why it was that the court found it so persuasive in that I couldn't find in Convolv the issue that we're talking about here, which is, does Baldwin and its progeny stand for the proposition that if it says a computer, you can have more than one computer, but every single computer has to perform all the claimed?
So do you have a distinction for Convolv?
I couldn't find one because I couldn't find what the court found was persuasive. I have it in my backpack if Your Honor would like me to go look at it again, but
no, that's all right.
I struggled with it. I truly did because I didn't see where this proposition was addressed. And it needs to be addressed for litigants going forward. Can you get around infringement if you have, for example, SonicWall, that the 408...
Well, Convolv talks about Baldwin, and Baldwin talks about not having the word A in the preamble.
That's right, Your Honor. Thank you for reminding me. That's not our claim. Our claim reads, the computer part comes later. The preamble is this: a computer processor-based multilingual method for scanning incoming program code comprising. And the A computer doesn't show up in the preamble. It comes later. And the same with Claim 22. Thank you for reminding me. That's why I was struggling with why did the court find Convolve applicable when that's not how our claim reads, either Claim 1 or Claim 22. So this is a very important issue that we need clarification on from this court. Either SonicWall and the district court is correct, in which case Baldwin really is kind of meaningless, or it's not correct, in which case it should be reversed. Your Honor, briefly on damages, with the court's permission, I would just simply like to refer the court, starting at Appendix 14953, running all the way through Appendix 13958. So we've got over approximately 30 pages, is the expert report of Dr. Striegel. And he's not just a damages expert. He actually is a PhD professor of computer science and engineering at Notre Dame with over 20 years experience. And he lists very meticulously the analysis he did to do the apportionment. And most importantly, if we look at Appendix 14961, he then takes not just the other technical experts' opinions, but he takes his own reading of the source code, discussions with all three of Fingen's technical experts, the depositions of SonicWall employees, and all SonicWall documents.
Is this confidential information?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, no. He doesn't give details in these sections, so this was
marked,
not...
It's all marked confidential.
Oh, it is marked confidential, okay.
In the appendix, but I don't know whether that... people typically mark huge swaths of appendices confidential,
yes,
and they don't really mean it.
I think that is exactly what happened here, because I know we argued this actually in public at the hearing. So the bottom line being this, if this is not sufficient to pass Daubert muster, then I truly don't know what is. Could there be a cross-examination? Of course there could be cross-examination. It goes to weight, not the admissibility. Well, what about these sub-features? And he discussed those at his deposition, why he didn't find them applicable. But as far as his actual analysis laid out in meticulous detail in almost 30 pages in his report, it has to be enough to pass Daubert muster. And if the court has no other questions, I'm 2 minutes into the red zone. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Counselor Gaudet, did I pronounce that right?
Gaudet. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, and may it please the court. I will address the issues in the same order that Ms. Brooks did, unless the court has questions or wants me to address something else. Beginning with the downloadable issue, the question of whether or not something is, as she put it, executable literally upon arrival, that really sort of shifts the focus from the issue that was dispositive here, which was everyone agreed that at no point ever does the accused gateway have in its possession even all of these packets, much less something that would satisfy the court's construction. They stipulated the construction. And more important than just stipulating the construction, and the judge, Judge Freeman quoted this, they said in the brief, there are no claim construction issues left to decide. This is nothing but evidence. And the evidence that Judge Freeman cited was the evidence from their expert about what it means to be executable. And what their expert said is that executable is a piece of code that actually executes. So, again, no constructions left. And Judge Freeman said it over and over again. Just show me the evidence. Show me the evidence of the piece of code that actually executes on this gateway. And, of course, it doesn't exist. Arguments about what's in the specification, arguments about how everyone must know how the internet worked, that's the realm of claim construction. They told Judge Freeman there are no claim construction arguments here. Even so, to address the citations that Ms. Brooks went to, when you look at that citation at the bottom of column 15 of the 494 patent, unambiguously, this is talking about complete files that are in executable form, inflating a compressed file, and now accessible, including executables. The entire file is at the receiver, and the entire file as such gets analyzed by the receiver. There are absolutely no disclosures in any of these patents.
Counsel, do you agree that executable means that's capable of execution but doesn't have to be executed?
Yes. That, with respect, to, there are two different pieces of the construction. There's executable means something, code that, that, I think, let's see, the precise language is, from their expert, is a piece of code that can actually execute. So can actually execute. That's part number one of the construction. Now, it does actually have to execute as an additional requirement at the destination computer, but that's a separate requirement. We're just focusing on the first part of the claim construction, which is it's got to be an executable. There are no disclosures anywhere in the specifications of what they're trying to cover, namely analyzing an unreassembled packet on a packet-by-packet basis. Well, that never happens.
When the in the real world, when yes. the packets are received, in this case by SonicWall or whoever, yes. They're received in a non-executable, at that moment, form. I think we all agree to that.
Yes.
So why isn't Ms. Brooks right that if you construe, if you apply the construction the way that you're applying it, this would not really read on anything?
Your Honor, my answer is it's actually the part of that question you sort of jumped over a little bit. It's almost, what exactly is her point? The construction's the construction.
Well, I understand, but...
Perhaps her argument would need to be that the word receiving could mean something different in some other case. That would be a different claim construction argument, so that maybe receiving doesn't require that it's executable at that moment. You can, as long as the inspector itself or the receiver itself can then do something and then forward it on to another buffer within the same device.
But again, to get back to the simple
yes.
problem is when the receipt occurs by the device, then at that point it is not executable unless you read executable to mean that it potentially can be executed when it's reconfigured.
We agree completely, Your Honor. But there is nothing ambiguous. I'm sorry.
But then if that's true, since every device receives these right. things in a non-executable form,
correct.
Then the patent reads on nothing.
Your Honor, if that is the necessary conclusion, then that would be the my mail takeaway, which is
that
they stipulated.
That would lead one to think that maybe that isn't the right way to view the issue.
Your Honor.
And what constitutes, you know, receipt?
Well, Your Honor, that last part in terms of what constitutes receipt is a claim construction argument that perhaps they could have made to the district court. And in another case where that matters, they probably would. In other words, in another case where the firewall actually reassembled packets, or the gateway reassembled packets, then the meaning of receipt would probably be really important, and that's the argument they could make. In our case, it just doesn't matter, because whatever receipt means, we never have possession of an executable. It never happens. And so that's where I'm saying, what we know for sure is that their stipulation ended the possibility of infringement in this case, right? Then they didn't ask for subsidiary claim constructions. In a case in which they wanted to accuse a device that reassembled the packets and formed an executable on the inspector or the gateway, perhaps they could argue that receive doesn't mean executable upon arrival. It could mean executable a few moments later. Okay, but that's about the meaning of receive, which is not the basis. I mean, here our point is, whatever receive means. There is no conceivable definition you can give to receive that we would satisfy, because there is never an executable on the inspector, on the gateway. Your Honor, I will, let me see if there are other issues on,
Can you
yes,
just, I can't find it right now.
Yes.
Where is the claim construction of executable?
Your Honor, the claim construction is at it's Appendix 39, Your Honor.
Thank you. Yes, right.
I apologize. There was another thought I wanted to share, but I want to
go ahead.
Beautiful.
Go ahead.
The other piece of this puzzle, Your Honor, is... In this case, they did more than just stipulate to a claim construction. They stipulated to a claim construction. They then told the court, we don't want any more claim constructions. We want you to decide this on the evidence. So then the evidence question is, all right, what is an executable application? The only evidence in this record is from their expert who says it's a piece of code that can actually execute. Okay, as a matter of fact, not as a matter of claim construction, as a matter of fact, that piece, and the district court repeatedly cites it, we're no longer talking about claim construction, we're talking about evidence and products. Now, there is no reason to believe that same record would necessarily occur in some other case. I don't know what the other evidence would be, but what was so unique here is there was a stipulated construction, an insistence that there was to be no more constructions, and that would only be decided on evidence by FinGen, and the judge repeatedly saying, show me the evidence, where is the evidence? And the only evidence is a piece of code that can actually execute is what an executable is. Perhaps, again, to this point.
Counselor Brooks whether FinGen had presented any evidence that an IP packet that's received at Sonic Stonewall Gateways could be executed. What's your answer to that question?
Absolutely not. There is no evidence that an IP packet that arrives at a SonicWall gateway could be executed.
Following up on what Judge Bryson and Judge Rain have been asking you, is there a way for a hypothetical defendant to infringe the claims, including the terminology downloadable?
There are two ways that would happen, neither of which happened in this case. Number one is FinGen creates a question of fact on rather than conceding that there are to be no more claim constructions and having the only bit of evidence as to what an executable is being a piece of code that can actually execute, they have an expert say something else. That's one possibility, just simply a different evidentiary record. Possibility, in other words, that was a key link of this finding that doesn't necessarily appear in the next case. Possibility number two is they have a claim construction, they ask for a claim construction of the term receiving. And the point in our case is no matter what receiving means, we can't possibly satisfy it because we are never at any point in possession, even of all the packets, much less of something that's a download. Yeah, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, no, that's okay. So what would the expert need to opine? So I let's assume this is the construction. Like, not you can go get a new claim construction. This is the construction. What would the expert need to opine, in your opinion, so that this claim could be infringed by a hypothetical defendant? Because you're saying a different expert opinion.
And to be clear about my premise is what the expert said was an important part of this linkage. And so on this record, that got us to this conclusion. I imagine the expert could take some sort of a position that executable, you know, doesn't mean a piece of code that can actually execute. Instead, it means this is not in the record. It means it could mean packets that, when assembled, could be executable, right? Theoretically, there could be an expert could say something like that. My point is that's simply a question of evidence. I'm now literally making up evidence of what somebody might be able to say, but that wasn't the evidence in this case.
But the term executable was never construed as such.
Correct. It was not, and SonicWall, I'm sorry, FinGen deliberately said there are to be no more constructions. This is just a question about
it. Yeah, we see this a lot, and particularly in district courts, where we are faced with a construction of a construction.
Yes.
And we have a construction here in which it now becomes quite evident, to me at least, that one of the terms in the construction is the term that really needs to be attended to.
Your Honor,
executable.
I agree with that, but this is what you probably don't see nearly as often. The Judge Freeman quoted this in her order. Not only did no one ask for a construction of the construction, FinGen affirmatively disavowed it and said you should do no more constructions. This is only a question of evidence.
That is often the case. Is often the case that each side has its own view, in which it is entirely confident as to what that term really means, and it doesn't become evident until after claim construction that they don't have the same view.
But this was during the summary judgment motions, though.
And even
with O2 Micro, once you disavow a construction, then it does just become a question of the evidence. That's what they said, that basically we should let the facts determine what it means to be executable.
Both experts agree on what executable meant? Was that agreed by the experts?
I know for sure no one disagreed with what Dr. Cole said. Dr. Cole was FinGen's expert. That's the expert that the court keeps Exactly. Keeps quoting. Experts agreed it's a piece of code that can actually execute, run, or perform a function on a system.
Not very helpful for purposes of our current dispute, it seems.
Well Your Honor, it is only in this sense. We know for sure that there is never, I mean, unlike all the embodiments, there is never a file on the SonicWall devices that can actually execute, run, or perform a function on a system.
Is that because, not because of the nature or the makeup of the file, but because of the way that SonicWall's gateways operate?
Correct. That's correct. Because SonicWall, unlike others, SonicWall doesn't take those packets and take the payload out of them and reassemble it into an executable file and then scan the executable file for potential malware. That's but how the rest...
Your response to Judge Cunningham a while ago when she asked you if executable could mean may be executed or something like that, and you said yes. So even though your gateways may not operate differently and they don't execute packets upon the receipt, still those packets could be executable.
No, Your Honor. The evidence in the record is that they could not.
Ever on the device. Until they're reassembled.
Well, no, the device never reassembles.
I know the device doesn't, but well, they can be reassembled. They're subject to being reassembled, at which point they're readily executable.
They're actually not, Your Honor, because the device never even has all of the packets at the same time.
Never mind the device. The ultimate destination computer can do all the reassembling, and that produces a file that's executable. I think we all agree with that.
We do agree with that, Your Honor. But again, both the claim and what they said in the 494 patent owner preliminary response in an IPR is that the downloadable, which is defined as the executable, the thing that has to, that can actually execute, has to be on the intermediary device, the inspector or the receiver.
So it sounded like when you've been answering some of these other questions, you do think that the downloadable claims could be infringed under certain circumstances, just not circumstances here.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'm not saying that they are uninfringeable. That's correct.
And under agreed construction by the parties.
That's right. And that was, Your Honor, that was one of the first things we said to the district court, is the rest of the industry actually reassembles a file at the gateway, turns it into an executable, and either actually executes it or scans it to see if there is malware in there. We are unique in that rather than doing that, we literally just look at individual packets for very specific byte sequences, you know, particular series of ones and zeros, and either pass them along or don't pass them along, but we don't look at anything in relationship to a packet that came before or a packet that came after. It's a less expensive way of doing it. We've had a lot of success with that, but it's different. And that's why, that was part of Judge Freeman's understanding of all this, is this is not an argument. Just coincidentally, I'd been in front of Judge Freeman defending a different client in a different Finchin case on the same patent. And I said, we didn't make this argument in that case, because in that case, like the rest of the industry, the company actually reassembled the files at the gateway and inspected them. And so they were absolutely in possession of an executable. But when you literally just look at one packet and send it on, it's sort of like the analogy, in the puzzle analogy, Judge Freeman's analogy was not that you don't have a puzzle, but you don't have a picture. You've got the pieces of a picture, but it would be like sending a bunch of jigsaw puzzles at the same time, a bunch of pieces completely intermingled through a device, looking at one, moving it on, looking at one, moving it on, and you never have a picture at that device. That was her analogy.
Can you turn to the other issues that were brought up?
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to the 408 patent, Baldwin addressed a different question. Baldwin's question was, in a situation in which you've got here, there it was a pre-soaked fabric roll, you have multiple pre-soaked fabric rolls which each satisfy every one of the limitations, is that still an infringement? And the answer was absolutely. That's not at all our question here. Our question is, what if you've got a computer or multiple computers that do not each satisfy all the limitations? That question was answered very directly by In re Varma, which is the analogy of for a dog owner to have a dog that rolls over and fetches a stick, it does not suffice that he have two dogs, each able to perform just one of the tasks.
Can you distinguish Symantec?
The Symantec case, Your Honor, there the claim term was computer system. It was not a computer. It was a computer system. And the district court looked at the specification and said, in all the embodiments in the specification, this computer system is only a single computer. The Federal Circuit said, no, you're reading an embodiment from the specification into the claims. The word system, by its very nature, includes more than just a single computer. And so it can be, you know, literally a computer system encompasses multiple computers, each of which can just do, you know, as long as that computer system collectively satisfies everything, you've literally satisfied the claim. Finally, on the damages issues, bearing in mind the standard of review, which is abuse of discretion, and the question of did Judge Freeman identify the correct legal rule, and then were her findings illogical, implausible, or without support in the inferences from the facts in the record, I actually want to very briefly go to exactly the pages that Ms. Brooks was referring to. The first is Appendix 14142. This is 14142. This is the SonicWall marketing document that the expert used to break up, in this case, the gateways into what he referred to as 12 top-level functions. And this is the first page. 14142 is the first page, and this was the one that we focused on at the Daubert hearing. And so RFDPI engine was one of the 12 functions. That's just what's right there at the top of that page. And then there are five sub-functions with long explanations. Okay, so that's the description. Now, if we now turn to the mapping, which I believe Ms. Brooks said was the most important part of Dr. Striegel's analysis, that's at 14964. The first single-spaced paragraph refers to the RFDPI engine, and that was, it's taken straight from this document, the document we just looked at 14142. And the entirety of the analysis, everything we get about why Dr. Striegel wants to take all of the value from RFDPI with all of those sub-functions into the royalty base is the second sentence here. For the 844, 494, and 926, the RFDPI engine overlaps at least by receiving the downloadable, period. That's it. That's the sum total of the analysis. And what Judge Freeman found was, first of all, overlaps isn't even the right question. The question under Erickson and the apportionment case law isn't just, you know, if you imagine sort of concentric circles, is there some little overlap? It's, you know, between the claims and the accused product. It's, are there also a bunch of non-infringing features in the accused product with which you don't overlap, or which you don't cover? So overlaps isn't the right question. But in this case, Dr. Striegel made...
Yeah, it needs to be congruent, not simply...
Correct.
In Venn diagram form, having some area of overlap.
That's precisely correct, Your Honor. And there's no dispute that he did not apportion down to the five elements that are referenced here. They admitted that to the district court. He admitted it in his deposition. That's everything I have, unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you very much.
Counselor Brooks, we'll restore your five-minute rebuttal time.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Let's start again with the 494 and 780 and 844. Again, what counsel for SonicWall just argued was that the rest of the industry reassembles the packet at the gateway. Well, the way the claim reads, that's still too late. The packets have to be reassembled before getting to the gateway, according to SonicWall and according to the court, because it says a receiver for receiving an incoming downloadable. So this reassembly is simply a red herring that is not what the court decided. Here's what the court decided. Appendix 13098 is the oral argument on the summary judgment. And the court says at line 23, it seems to me that the patent says when it's received, it has to be executable. Not at some point in the future, it has to be capable of being executable. So this is exactly the discussion we just had today, where apparently we lost that. That capable of being executed in the district court's mind was not enough. And then Mr. Murkaji, on behalf of FinGen, was arguing, but Your Honor, may I say this? The question becomes, what is an executable application? It's executable, not executed. And it was the court that said, okay, we are not going to have new claim constructions. This is on the next page, 13099, at line 10 and 11. Okay, we are not going to have new claim construction because this argument is not going your way. I'm not going to construe my construction, which is why we're here today, because had the court determined that executable could simply be exactly what we're saying, which is a type of file capable of being executed, which is the entire gist of this invention, then we wouldn't have a construction where nobody infringes. It's all read out. And Judge Cunningham, I know you asked several times for examples of where it would be infringing, and the only answer I heard back was this reassembly. But the reassembly takes place after the receiver receives what is supposed to be the executable. And so therefore that, according again to the court, is not sufficient. So that's all I would say unless the court has other questions on that issue. Turning now to the A computer, Your Honor asked for counsel to distinguish Symantec. And what counsel said was that Symantec dealt with a computer system and not a computer. And that was the distinguishing. With all due respect, Symantec actually dealt with both. The court found in its opinion right before Section C, because we find the terms computer and computer system are not limited to a single computer, we must vacate and remand to the district court on the issue of infringement of CA's gateway product. So it dealt with both a computer and a computer system. Oh, and I'm sorry, there was one other thing I wanted to say quickly on the executable. All Dr. Cole said was at Appendix 10398, okay, what's your understanding of an executable application program? Answer, that is a program that can execute or run on a computer. And there's no dispute that these packets, before they're transmitted, are an executable. They're transmitted in packets because that's how the internet does it, and they will get executed on the destination computer. And so Dr. Cole's testimony does nothing to take away from that. And lastly, I would just refer on the issue of damages. It wasn't that when I talked about the mapping, what I was talking about was the mapping that Dr. Striegel did in his Appendix D. At Appendix 14974 is where it starts, and it's a very specific, this is the product, these are the specific claims, and while he did use the term overlap, which is unfortunate in that section of his report, when he begins the analysis, he uses a different term. At Appendix 14961, he says, from the top level functions identified earlier, I have analyzed the products and the infringement of those products and determined which top level functions are attributable to the asserted claims of the asserted patents.
But he never actually got down to the lower level functions.
He did.
He disclaimed analyzing those, if I recall.
Actually, what he said at his deposition, and we cited in our brief, Your Honor, when asked about, well, what about these sub-functions, he said, I did consider them, but I didn't use them for my analysis because some of them are, I think he gave an analogy of a car. You know, some people may want leather and some people may want cloth upholstery. That's not what's important.
No, they didn't make their way into his analysis, into his apportionment.
That's correct. He specifically rejected using them because he said some of those were more important than others, so he stuck with the top-level functions. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. We thank the parties for their arguments. Take the case under advisement.